Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You guys are listening to Nothing But Net Radio, part of the Dash Radio Network. Follow us on Twitter at DenverStiffs, at NBN-Radio. Check us out on Instagram at TheDenverStiffs, and follow us and give us a like on Facebook. Also, if you are catching the Pickaxe Pundit Show on the podcast version, why aren't you listening to Nothing But Net Radio and getting us live, for one? And for two, if you are, give us a subscribe, give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you're using to listen to your podcasts. Alrighty, let's get right into our co-host for the day, Mr. Gordon Gross from Colorado Springs. Gordon, what's up, man?
Not much, just getting started and looking forward to talking some Nuggets, even if the Nuggets aren't making it real easy to look forward to their games.
Yeah. We were talking about this right before we went on the pod. It's been a rough week for the Nuggets, in terms of the game of basketball, which is a bad thing because that's what they do. But we're gonna get into it. I wanna talk about this. It ends up being a 3-game losing streak. Nuggets got off the schneid last night against the Grizzlies, but we'll talk about the 3-game losing streak. What we liked about it and what we didn't like about it. I don't think we liked anything about it. After that, we'll get into the Memphis game specifically, since they just played that one last night. We'll take a break. After that, I want to talk about Nikola Jokic. There's a lot of talk right now going on about Nikola, and he's been in kind of a slump. He's been in a bit of a shooting slump in particular. So I want to talk about that. And then finally, if we have some time, we got the Spurs coming up here tonight in about an hour and a half. So might as well get a little preview of them, and that'll be our show. So let's get right into it, Gordon. 3-game losing streak. What was the worst loss there? I mean, obviously, I think most people will take the. I think most people are probably about as happy as you can be about a loss. When it came to losing to the Warriors, but the Hawks and the Kings were both, those are both teams Nuggets should beat pretty much under any circumstance. So
those were tragedies.
Right, exactly. So which one was the worst one?
It has to be Atlanta, because you were prepared.
Right.
Like, you can tell me that you have a trap game, or you can tell me that, you know, it was on the road.
Back to back.
For the Kings. Yeah, for the Kings, there's a bunch of things that work. You have had a couple of days to stew about the fact that you blew the Kings game, and you roll out and provide the effort that you provided in the Hawks game. No, that's the loss that's basically unforgivable. There's no reason for that.
Right, exactly. And the thing about the Hawks, too, is it's like that is a team that is so clearly trying to lose, right? Their talent level is
the office is trying to, like, the front office will be okay with losing. The players are like, screw you, I'm going to win what I can.
Yeah, exactly right. So, but the, I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is, so both these are both the cellar dwellers of the of their respective conferences, but the Hawks, you feel like with the Kings, like they've kind of like turned that corner in their rebuild, right? Like they've got this like young group of guys now, kind of like how the Nuggets have. You know, they got De'Aaron Fox, they got Scal and Willie Cauley-Stein, and now they had like similar to the Nuggets last year. This year they had 3 first round picks. They used all 3 of them. Like, you feel like, okay, that's a team that's kind of now turned that. They've hit rock bottom, and now they're coming back up and trying to start to get better. The Hawks, I feel like they're still like on the decline. Like, I feel like this is rock bottom this year for them. Like, they should end up, in my opinion, they should end up with the most lottery balls at the end, when it's all said and done at the end of the season. So to lose to that team at home, like you said, when you're prepared, like, yeah, it's got to be the worst one of the two. Because the thing about the Kings is it was on the road. It was on a back-to-back. When I was on the pod last week when I was on Locked On with Adam, that's what I said. We were trying to predict how they would go over those next 3 games. None of us had them at 0-3, but I said there would be 1-2, because I was like this is kind of who the Nuggets are. They'll drop that game in Sacramento,
right,
on a back to back. That's just the type of game they would drop. The home game in Atlanta, you know, that's the type of game you win. And it makes me start to wonder, is this home court advantage that the Nuggets have had this season, is it really as advantageous as we make it out to, or have maybe they just had a good string, early string of games?
I don't believe in it if they're not going to show up.
Right.
I mean, if they play slow, other teams have no reason to get tired, and the crowd's not going to get into it because we don't – the Nuggets fans are not a kind of crowd that is like, well, we're just going to cheer for 48 minutes even if you provide dog shit on the court. That's not the kind of fan base that
the Nuggets
are. No, they're
a momentum crowd for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you do some high-flying dunks or some transition things, they get bouncy. And if you're just going to stand around at midcourt, you know, and, you know, slag threes off the backboard, then they don't care that they will become disinterested quickly.
Right.
So the home court advantage is only there if the team plays the right way. If they don't, they have no home court advantage.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's something that it's something that you want to see them capitalize on. I think everybody was, one of the most exciting things about the first half of the season was that they were so talented so dominant at home, and you started to get that feeling like it was back when they won the 57 games, which is the last time we really had some major excitement going in the season. And you started to feel like, okay, that they've got that home court advantage back. That's a huge part of what's going to make them so successful. But you're right, if they're going to come out like they do against the Hawks and just almost it was almost like, you know,
first quarters in general, man.
Yeah,
like, quarters in general, like for everyone, they've been butchering these first quarter, you know, appearances and keeping teams in it and letting guys get comfortable.
Right.
And not putting them behind the eight ball, and then it's a fight the whole game.
Right.
They've been doing this for, you know, the last month. It's been terrible.
Right, and it's and what makes it even tougher, and what I think we saw on that on this three game slide, they do the worst. They do the worst against the worst teams. Right. They play down to their competition. I mean, when they played against the Warriors, they came out, and that was like the Nuggets at their finest. I mean, that was other than the fact that they lost. It was everything you wanted. You got a triple-double out of Nikola Jokic, and he was playing Nikola Jokic-type basketball, getting down into the post, making things happen. You got 20-plus points from both Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. You got 20-plus points from Trey Lyles. Like, that's the Nuggets' recipe to win. They don't do it because they're playing in Golden State, and Steph Curry is ridiculous. But that it's so frustrating because you're like, okay, you played like that against the team, and even when you gave your best shot, you lost just because of how good they are. If you just give your best shot like that against Atlanta, you win by like 25 points, you know, or against Sacramento on the second night of a back to back, then you might win that game by a couple of points late, you know, and win it late.
Right. And that Sacramento game, I mean, it was bad. It was just terrible basketball. But all of the turnovers, you're like, well, you got careless with the ball, so careless. You just didn't care at all about ball protection.
Right.
And so you coughed it up, and you didn't have enough chances. You didn't have enough offensive possessions to win that game. You had plenty of offensive possessions against Atlanta. They just didn't come. They didn't show up. Like, it's a very weird no-show. It was, for me, one of the most disappointing games of the season.
Yeah,
just because they had every reason to show up, and they just, against a team that if you show up, you can put them down, and they decided not to do it. It was just weird.
Right. And it's the formula I think we've seen for, you know, when you said the most disappointing game of the season, like, that's when you think of, okay, well, what are the other most disappointing games of the season? I think of, like, the Philly game specifically comes to mind. And it was almost like the exact same story in that one, too. It's just like, okay, we're not really going to give any effort or energy here. We're just going to kind of settle for our jump shots, and they're not going to fall. And what was interesting is everybody in the locker room was talking about this last night, all the players, and they were like, and the problem with the Atlanta game also was that when our shots weren't falling, we also didn't give any effort on defense. And so, you know, that what happened was, okay, well, you know, we basically let Atlanta have whatever they wanted. We didn't make any effort on our end, and then we end up losing to the worst team in the league by 13 points at home. Yeah, like we've been saying, I mean, it's got to be the most egregious game.
But again, it had all the hallmarks of what Denver has been known for this year when they play poorly.
Right,
you start slow, You bring no energy of your own, so the crowd can't get into it. And so then they can't give you any energy. Because you have no energy, you play no defense. You brick once, because you're settling for outside shots and you won't go in the paint.
Right.
Once you brick, other teams are fast breaking you and you just give them easy layups. Then you go back down the other end of the court and you brick threes and they come back to your side and they get easy layups.
Right.
Like, it's really, that's the worst kind of basketball. And I don't want to see any more of that. Like, that's, they've done enough of that this year for me already. There's been a half a dozen games easily where that's been
right.
the case.
Right. And it's, I mean, it's just such a clearly, you know, it's such clearly effort driven is the reason that they're having those problems. And it's, I mean, you know, you want, you understand to a point because it is a young team and young teams are prone to doing things like playing down to your competition and not maybe giving your effort, all your effort on a game that you think you have in the bag. But it, at some point, it can't be an excuse, right? This is,
right. Well, once you know it, like, once you know that's the problem, you know, you can't be like, well, that's okay. We're going to show up the exact same way the next game, and it'll be fine.
Right.
No, it's not fun.
Right. So let me kind of pivot to this a little bit, because I do want to talk about that Golden State game, because it's I thought it was funny listening to Coach post game. You just thought they won. You know, he was. I've never right. seen him that happy after a loss, and the reporters all very happy. All the questions were positive. You know, all the questions were. What did you think? You know, it's great to see Jokic back playing his game. I mean, there's not really moral victories, in my opinion, in professional sports, but is that as close to a moral victory as you can get?
Well, I don't know, because I still don't believe in them, but games like that should be measuring sticks. And so what Malone was happy about, in my opinion, was that they measured up. That you looked at them right. and you said, look, if we were the 5 seed going against the 1 seed in the playoffs, that's how it should look. So if we're going to be the 5 seed, that's what we should bring to a playoff game. It should look like that. So you say, okay, so even though we've been screwing up against, you know, pathetic teams, that's fine. We still have it. The team I thought we were is the team that, you know, we brought tonight. And we will bring that against Atlanta and everything will be fine. Because we just measured ourselves and said, yep, that's who we are.
Right.
But they didn't do that.
No, yeah, right.
So it's not a moral victory. The problem is it was a false – it's like a false positive. You know, when you get a – when you take a medical test and they're like, oh, you might have this. Let's take a look and examine it closer. You know, but you popped that you might be positive for whatever this problem is. Well, we popped for the problem of being a good team, and then we got tested again and found out that, no, we're not a good team.
You do not have good teamitis. That's,
exactly.
That's Dr. Gordon Gross for you guys right there. Anything like that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like you. I don't believe there's moral victories. I mean, I thought there was a lot of good to take out of that because of what I was talking about before, about how I thought they really did play their game and executed it. The downside of it, though, is...
But they also
like,
set it up well, man. Like, they, I mean, you had Wiles, like, showing up. You had... You gave spacing around Jokic, which they keep not doing.
Right.
You know, Will Barton wasn't really running the point in that game. So that made it easier. Like, some of the things about the roster that are cluttered up with people playing in the wrong spots or doing the wrong things didn't happen in the Golden State game. And for me, that's also a measuring stick for the coaches. Like, if you know that it works and you prove to yourself that it works, I don't know why you go back to other things.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if it's all necessarily because some of the times, you know, I think the coach gets the blame for some stuff. And it's you never know. You never know if it's the coach not making the right adjustments or the players not executing the coach's adjustments.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, and some of me tends to think it's more on the latter there, where especially because you see it, because we see it against what we're talking about. We see it against Golden State. They come out and they play their game and they execute it perfectly
right.
against Golden State. Then against Atlanta,
when they bring the energy.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And
right.
And so to me, I think some of it is just a matter of the focus. The players not having the focus to. Because they are doing something that's not the norm for basketball, and it's not easy. You know, easy basketball is to just play ISO, right, and shoot jumpers. Or
right,
maybe,
yeah, yeah.
Or if you want to give it effort, you're still the easy way to do it is just play isolation basketball and then try and get into the net, and other guys will go stand in the corners and you know, you try and kick out to them. The Nuggets are playing something of a somewhat more complex system when they're using Jokic the way he's supposed to be used most effectively. And so if they don't have the focus, then it's, you know, they don't have that crispness. That's when you start to see the turnovers that we see where they just, you know, in Jokic in particular.
No,
will have.
Yeah, but their turnovers, like Jokic has his turnovers and they annoy me. But the fact that we don't have a person on the team who can make an entry pass, like Will Barton included, yeah, there is no one on this team who can throw the ball 8 feet into the paint over the outstretched arms of some other person.
Other than Jokic.
It's unbelievable to me. Yeah, other than Jokic, who can do it from the half court line.
Right.
Like, I don't understand. It's so bizarre to me that some of the basic basketball skills are so underserved on this team, where just really what you would assume would be really easy things. You know, last night, Will Barton throws a ball right out of bounds.
Right.
You know, yeah, I know that Marc Gasol was holding Jokic, but he's throwing the ball like 15 feet, you know, this way and being like, Jokic, use your giant arms and reach way out and grab it. I'm not going to throw it onto your chest in any fashion.
Use your go-go gadget arms and...
Yeah, I just... It's that sort of stuff. It's Jamal Murray dribbling off his foot or throwing into three other jerseys or... Like, those sorts of skills, we don't have anybody... crispness.
Right.
We lack... The Nuggets just lack crispness when anybody puts any pressure on them.
Right.
And again, that's part of being a young team. You don't have all your skills yet. You know, Jamal Murray's still, what, like a junior in college?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I get it. You know, I absolutely get it. It's just exceedingly frustrating when you're like, I want you to make a basic basketball play right now and get Jokic the ball on the block. And then it's a turnover layup, you know, turnover layup, turnover foul.
Right.
It's those things that the Nuggets really, really have to work on. Because when they're focused, it's okay. It's sort of like the way that they play defense, really. They play on-ball defense, all right.
Right.
You know, you have... You know, you have Torrey Craig and not last night, but you have Torrey Craig and Malik Beasley and even Jamal Murray. They when they face up, when the guy is right in front of them and the ball is 2 feet from their face, they're like, I got this.
Right.
And then if someone's cutting behind them, they don't got this. That's not what they got.
Right. Well, and that Gary Harris is, I think, is guilty. Wilson Chandler is. I mean, they're really all of them are guilty of that. All those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're 100% right. They're all fairly strong. Emmanuel Mudiay. They're all strong one-on-one defenders when a guy's just trying to ISO and you're right, and they can face him up. But
and there's no screens.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's no screens that they got to try and fight over. But anytime right. there's any sort of movement or any action going on, like, yeah, they just get lost. They don't fight over the screen. Jamal and Gary have got better about that. Jamal especially, I noticed, he will almost always try to fight over the screen, almost to a fault, to the point where it's like, well, dude, you're clearly about to just get screened here. And
Malik Beasley, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I was really impressed with Malik Beasley last night. His want to was really there. I like that.
Well, let's get into that Memphis game. I think we've probably spent enough time on that losing streak. You're right. And Malik was one of the big talks after the game, because really the bench was pretty much phenomenal in terms of the way the game swung. The starters were absolutely terrible out of the gate.
Yeah, okay, I hear you.
And,
yeah,
and then the bench kind of came back and got it back within a reasonable game, and then the starters played well in the third quarter. To kind of make the movement. But Malik Beasley, I thought, was one of the guys who was a catalyst, especially on defense, and Richard Jefferson, for that matter. Both those guys played, I thought, played really well on defense that combined with Memphis's just ineptitude.
Yes.
And that really helped swing it, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and they put pressure on Memphis, and Memphis, you know, folded.
Right.
But the Nuggets hadn't put pressure on anybody in the last week, so it was nice to see them put pressure on someone.
Right.
You know, and at least make them beat you. Do not just fold for them. And so Beasley was a huge part of that. I loved his defense and his willingness to cut off passing lanes. Heck, Fareed was cutting off passing lanes. Fareed had, you know, several steals last night.
Yeah.
Just, like, getting hands out there, you know, getting up on people. Didn't seem to miss many rotations as I watched the game, you know, live. He was where he was supposed to be, which was, nice to see.
Right.
Because that's usually the problem. But, I mean, literally, the Freed defense in that game was just fine.
You know, and that's – I want to touch on that real quick because that's so encouraging. See, I got to tell you, there's no player that I've done more of a 180 on is just like my feelings towards them. I think Kenneth Freed, since I've been, you know, the player who, since I've been able to go into the locker rooms and talk to players more.
Right.
Kenneth, man, like, the guy just wants to play. He really does. But I've always said, well, yeah, that's fine. But if you want to play, then you got to do the things that coach is asking of you, which right. is play defense. So it's really encouraging to see him and see him play that last night. I mean, he only gets 15 minutes. And even I think even last night the vibe I got from him was it was like, you know, he was happy to get the minutes, but he's still, you know, still kind of like, man, I only got 15, like I really want to play more than that. But it's just good to see, like, he's another one of those guys who's got all the physical tools to be just fine on defense, to be actually very good on defense. And if he just puts, and I don't even want to say effort, I don't know if it's Freed, maybe he just doesn't value defense enough, I guess. Is the way I would
no,
say
it's,
it.
No, it's effort.
You think so?
He does. Well, and I agree that he doesn't – he doesn't care enough about the defensive end. That's not where the highlights are.
Right.
And he's not interested in improving. Like, if he was interested in improving, he would not rank dead last in, you know, points per possession allowed on defense. Like, he's right. the worst in the league. That's not necessarily like a stat that means everything,
right? It's not
but
the gospel.
But you are,
it's
very much like Moutier. Yeah, right. It's like Moutier, where you're like, look, man, if you are like the worst point guard in the league by RPM in multiple years running, mm-hmm. that's probably you. It's not a flaw of the stat.
Well, and then it's where you get the combination of as we're gonna sidebar here into a little bit of an analytics versus eye test discussion. But right, the key is always in evaluation is you can't just take one or the other.
Right.
And say that's all that matters. So when you see something like that where Fareed's last in points per possession allowed or Moutier's last in RPM, then you can say, okay, that's, like I said, that's an indicator of something. And then the eye test backs it up, right? I mean, you can watch the film on Fareed and you can just see he's like we talked about, he's just not, you know, he's fine if he's going to play one-on-one on a guy and he's engaged. I remember George Karl used to put, he'd put Fareed on LeBron James at the end of games because he was the one guy who had the physical tools that might be able to match up to a LeBron. So those, he's got the one-on-one stuff, but like if you tried to play him in any sort of, you know, team defense, it just doesn't happen.
Well, and it's just he's the sort of guy who, if you let him go against bench players, should be better. Because there's not a lot of guys who are going to be taking him off the dribble, and there's not a lot of point guards who are going to make him look stupid by, you know, running a bunch of action and hitting him up with back cuts and stuff.
Right.
But he doesn't want to be a backup. He wants to be a starter. But so the problem that this team seems to have at least in their losses, is that the people who think that they should deserve more time or should deserve a bigger platform aren't producing when it matters. Like, that's the frustrating thing about this team this year. They're doing fine, and, you know, they've lost their second-best player, so I get the problems. You have a lot of growth happening, but a lot of guys, you know, Will Barton is so focused on being a point guard that he forgets that Jokic is really the point guard.
Right.
Like, last night, he wasn't passing the ball. He wasn't working with him. Barton leaves the game. Lyles comes in instead of Plumlee, and all of a sudden, Jokic is like, hey, look, I can play again.
Right.
You know, it. Those are the sorts of things where you can just tell the disconnects on the team where guys are worrying too much about what am I supposed to be doing and not enough about what's available to me on the court.
Right. You know what was interesting last night?
It's just tough.
Last night, Jokic kind of, I mean, he referred to like how he has to play differently depending on who he's playing with up in the front court. Like, you know, he said, he's like, when Trey's in there, Trey can be that stretch four, and you know, I can work more in the post, where if it's Mason or Kenneth in there, you know, then I've got to be the stretch.
And, he takes that, again, and that's his role. That's what I'm talking about. He believes that he needs to be the stretch.
Right.
And so rather than running clear outs with Mason or Fareed or whatever he could be doing, instead he floats on the three-point
exactly.
line and chucks 0 for 8 threes.
Yeah.
Like, because he believes he's now the stretch four, and he says, never mind what I could be doing, here's what I should be doing. And that's the part where I would like to see Malone pull his guys aside and say, here, I know you feel like you're playing the stretch four right now. You are not playing the stretch four. I'm playing a 2-5 lineup.
Right.
So I need you to work in the paint in tandem and clear each other out and set screens and do back cuts and whatever you're going to do from 15 feet in.
Right. Because here's the thing, too. When you think about it, if you're not playing Emmanuel Mudiay, every other guard and every other wing on the team can shoot the three ball. Like, I mean, you probably want to avoid a ton of time where you're going to have Jokic with Plumlee and or Fareed, and then also Torrey Craig out there.
Right.
But you know, that's why if he's going to keep Jokic in those sort of situations, it's got to be, you know, you want to be with Jamal Murray and Gary Harris on the court, or with even with Will Barton. You've got to have those other guys who are those shooters who can stretch the floor for them and at least keep the lane open. Because I think what Jokic is seeing and what even a coach is seeing is, you know, this is why it didn't work with Nurkic, right? It was because Nurkic just clogged up
yes.
the lane
right.
and nothing could happen. But the key with Emmanuel Mudiay was also playing the point guard, and that was what made it really tough, was because Emmanuel really needs an open lane to be effective, more so than Jokic needs one. It helps Jokic, too. It helps cutters, right? And we haven't seen that as much this season. But I think if you play Jokic with Murray and a Harris and a Barton or a Chandler, he doesn't have to necessarily stretch that floor as much. You know, you can still cut. You can still find room in the lane when you've got two bigs, because Jokic isn't necessarily going to clog the lane up entirely himself. He's not like Plumlee or Fareed in that he can't hit anything outside of the restricted circle, right? I mean, he's got...
Right, yeah. The man, last year, he was like, what, the most efficient guy from, like, you know, 5 to 15 feet?
Right.
Like, he's got the touch. I don't worry about that. But he worries about it. And it's just, I feel like they haven't freed up everybody to believe in their own capabilities. And so we talk about how, you know, the Plumlee and Jokic lineup together is not, their plus minus is very minimal.
Right.
You know, as far as net, like their net rating is not good,
but barely. Yeah. But it's not like Jokic and Lyles, which is like plus 12 or something like that.
Right. Yeah. And Jokic without, Jokic without Plumlee is something like plus 6.5 or some, you know, crazy,
right.
We would be great number, but it's not necessarily that, and see, this is why they can't play together. It's the way that they are playing together is not making them effective.
Right.
And it's part of the problem that they had with, Millsap early in the year, when he hadn't figured out yet how to play with Jokic.
Yeah, and what stinks,
and I think it takes personal responsibility.
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, it was just with Millsap. What stinks too is like that right when he was starting to figure it out.
I know.
That was.
I know the what if of this season. You know,
exactly.
we talk about Jimmy Butler and how great he would be in Denver. You know, and the Nuggets weren't willing to move Murray to make that happen. And I understand if
right.
they're not focused on the next couple years, then yeah, you keep the guy that you think might have the huge upside. You know, you can always sign Jimmy Butler in 2 years anyway. Like,
right.
Seriously, like, if you really wanted to do that, you can pay Jimmy Butler a fortune, you know, 2 years from now and have him leave Minnesota.
Yeah, you could just give him Millsap's money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They'll have it.
Right.
And that could be a perfect plan for them. But the idea that that Jimmy Butler is better is, you know, and would have been perfect for this team is great, except if Jimmy Butler had gone down like Millsap, they would be in the exact same position. So the problem is not that they picked Millsap over Butler. The problem is Millsap is not here.
Right.
You know, the guy who's been healthy his whole career is not playing, and it's messing up what they were trying to do.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, tell you what. I still want to talk a little bit more about this Memphis game, but we kind of jumped already into the next section, which is about Nikola Jokic. So I think what we'll do, we'll go ahead. Let's hit a break, and we'll just keep talking when we come back. I think we'll talk a little bit more. Let's talk a little bit more about Memphis. We can talk a little bit more about Jokic.
Sure.
And then we'll get into the Spurs probably to wrap this thing up. So let's get a break, and let's be right back. We'll be right back.
When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. Sorry, I think Trey Burke might have just got signed. Random squirrel there moment. I'm with Zach Nikosh. I'm with Gordon Gross. We've been talking about this past run of terrible games, and then we started getting into Nikola Jokic there a little bit. So I guess I want to let's get back onto the Grizzlies here for just a second. I want to talk about. One of the things that the Nuggets needed to do against this Grizzlies team was simply play better defense. And I don't know, because here's the problem: they end up winning this game. Which they needed to. They did not want to go on a 4-game losing streak. But I don't know that you could necessarily be encouraged. Because let me ask you this, Gordon: do you think that last night's game was, and the fact that Memphis only scored 78 points? I mean, how much of that is actually a result of great defense by the Nuggets, and how much of it is a result that just Memphis is just not a good basketball team?
Memphis is basically terrible. Now they've played other basically terrible teams this last week, and you know have made them look great, but. The Grizzlies are without Conley in the lineup. They don't have the guy to orchestrate. They don't have the guy to drive the basket. They don't have the guy to set them up for early scores. So they're always looking in the last few seconds of a shot clock to make stuff happen, which was fine when they could play defense, but they can't play defense now either.
Right. The funny thing is. It's so funny that you said that, like without my they don't play a point guard.
No.
Other than Mario Chalmers comes in off the bench now. He was starting for a little while for him. And this is Mario Chalmers, who was like God knows where last season. I don't think he was playing at all. He's like the only actual point guard on the team right now other than Mike Conley, who of course is out. And they're not even getting minutes. I mean they start Tyreke Evans at the point guard, but Tyreke is a two in every sense of the word, and you're right. I tended to think that too. Like the one guy that the Grizzlies have is Marc Gasol, and for the most part, at least especially in the first half, Mark pretty much got whatever he wanted. Against the Nuggets, and then I thought he almost
Mark destroyed everyone except for Wiles.
Right.
Mark was like, okay, I can go wherever I want and do whatever I want, and then just stopped.
Right, and
in a way that has infuriated Grizzlies fans for the last decade.
Well, yeah, exactly. It was almost like he just decided. Yeah, I thought he did them a favor, and just decided to start settling for jump shots when because at the very beginning of the game they had Jokic on him, or Jokic kept getting switched on to him. And he got two fouls like almost instantly. It was one of those nights where you're like, oh great, here we go, Jokic is going to be in foul trouble all night. And then they basically didn't ever put him on Gasol again, and just had Plumlee on him for a while. And I mean, yeah, Gasol got everything he wanted against Plumlee. That's when he was able to get to the free throw line. That's when he was getting all of his points in the paint. And then he just started shooting threes in the second half. And Trey Lyles, being a guy that's willing to go out and defend at the 3-point line, and you know, not that Mason's not, but Mace is a guy that you want to kind of keep down in the lane on defense. You know, put Trey Lyles on him, and so Trey Lyles had a hand in Gasol's face every single time, and he didn't make any of his shots. And then so I mean, that other than that, and we kind of talked a little bit about Malik Beasley. I didn't really see anything else that to me stood out as exceptional.
They, like I said, they played the passing lanes well. They tried to short circuit any ability to roll to the rim, which was good. But Gasol just stopped trying to go to the rim.
Right.
Gasol is the very mature version of Jokic in the sense that neither of them really want the mantle of being the man.
Right.
That's why Gasol needs Conley around, because Conley has been the man even when people were telling you he'd never be the man.
Right.
You know, that was his thing. And Gasol doesn't want it. And Gasol's not the kind of guy who's going to put up 40 on you all the time.
Right.
Because he would rather pass or, you know, shoot a three or whatever it is he's going to do. He has other things that he's trying to do in a ball game, and Jokic is like that in that sense. The hope is that Jokic realizes better than Gasol ever did that if he just wants to dominate, he can dominate.
So let me ask you this: how does he do that though? Like this is, it's almost like almost have to have a debate on psychology here. But I mean, it's simple for us to say from our chairs here that, oh yeah, Jokic just needs to be more aggressive. He just needs to develop that mentality to be a more aggressive player. But like, there's certainly a line of thought that you either have it or you don't, right? Like, I mean, nobody taught Kobe Bryant how to be aggressive on offense. That's just the way he's built. Nobody has taught Will Barton how to be aggressive on offense. It's just the way, you know, it's just ingrained in him from being the guy, from likely being the far and away best guy on his basketball team for his entire life.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Whereas that's not really been the case for Jokic. When you think about it, I mean, even when he was in Serbia playing for Megalex, I mean, it's a different kind of setup over there, right? Like, the young guys aren't really looked at as the guy on the
team.
They're
seen and not heard.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And Jokic, it wasn't until his very, like, the very last run of games in playing for Megalex where he really was, it was him just taking over at that point, right? I mean, it was essentially the end of his last season there where he just blew up after having a good season all year, but he blew up at the end, and then that was like, okay, this guy's for real. And then he was immediately over here with the Nuggets, and again, very quickly, now he's been put into this role of like, well, okay, well, now you're the man. You are the star. You're the face of the franchise. You are the one who makes us go. And I don't know that you can just ask him to flip that switch. You know what I mean?
I think it's going to be easier for him in a couple of years. It's probably going to take him leading the next Serbian team, honestly.
Right.
I'm not going to lie to you. Like, even on the Serbian national team, they're, you know, one of the reasons that they were so many of the fans were upset with him for not playing this year was because all of their other real stars are going to have aged out
right
by the in the next 4 years before the next Eurobasket, because they switched it to a 4-year thing.
Right.
So, you know, Miloš Teodosic and all those guys aren't Boban, really going to be the man. Yeah, yeah, no. The guy who's going to be the man is going to be Jokic, who's going to be coming into his prime. It's going to be his team. And when he leads his national team on the international stage, in my opinion, that's when he's going to go ahead and realize that leadership is something he's going to have to do, and he's going to step
right.
up. And
you know, that's a great point.
And go ahead and dominate, because it'll matter then. It'll be something that he's done for country and can then do for team.
Right, because that's a good point, because, you know, when you think about it, he was definitely one of the main cogs, obviously, when they won the silver medal at the Olympics. But he wasn't like he wasn't the leader of that team. You know, there was all those veteran guys on that team. He wasn't
even the lead center of that team. He was just the guy that would come in and get the points.
Right, and like, get the point and just use his skills and just basically how he's been most comfortable, right? Like Jokic is the type of guy who probably in the NBA is best playing on, you know, he would be great on a team like Cleveland, or on a team like Golden State where he's surrounded by a bunch of veteran proven guys who know how this works and know how to lead a team, and he can just be there and play basketball. Like that's kind of where he's at in his mental arc right now, you're right. But I think
if he was on, say, the Trailblazers,
right?
Okay, you have Damian Willard, you have CJ McCollum, you have two guards who are willing to pass him the ball, who understand how to work a pick and roll, who will hand him the ball and be like, I pass it to you, now you score. And so he's not making the choice. He's just reacting.
Right.
If you give him the choice, he wants to facilitate for someone else. He wants to defer. So you have to get someone on the team who tells him what to do.
Right.
You need that alpha point guard to give him the ball and say, look, man, this is your turn now. You go in there and you kill people.
Right, right. Or here, I'm going to give you the ball, and then you know we're gonna. This is what we're going to run, and don't worry. Like,
right.
I'll make it work on my end. You just get me the ball back, and it'll make it happen. Which I think is why Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are to me they're so crucial. I've said a lot of times that Jamal Murray really this iteration of the Nuggets, the key to it is Jamal Murray. Like he has to be the one to become like the guy and be that Damian Lillard type player for the Nuggets.
Yes,
and that's what will make this work. But because without it, I just don't think we can sit here. We can rely, like we've been saying, I don't think you can just rely on Jokic to suddenly flip the switch and be an aggressive player who's you know, putting up 20 shots a night or something like that. Like, I just don't ever see that.
He's so damn good. He's so damn good, but he's never gonna crack his usage, you know, up like to like Westbrook levels.
Right.
It's not in him. It's not in his nature. He wants to pass. He wants to facilitate, and he's so damn good at it that it creates all these opportunities for other people.
Right.
But at some point, someone is going to have to step up and take the reins, just even in the moment when he's being passive, to force him back to being active.
Right.
That someone else has to do that. I don't think that's going to be internal for him for a while. And the Nuggets don't have that guy.
Right.
Like, they don't have that guy. That would have been Jimmy Butler's job if Jimmy was here.
I was just thinking the, you know, exact what I mean? Like, I was thinking the exact same thing.
That would be his job. Is he would go on the sideline, grab him by the jersey, be like, okay, the next five plays down the court, I'm giving you the ball and I want you to score.
Right.
I'm not messing around with you.
That's it.
I will close, like, you know, but your job is to go basically hit him in the body until they fall over.
That's the great point of it. Say, I think the best way to put it is somebody needs to hold him accountable for his aggressiveness, and it can't just be the coach, right? And it can't and it can't be Richard Jefferson or Mike Miller. Like it's got to be a proven guy, and I think it could be a Gary Harris or Jamal Murray. Both of those guys, I wonder if either one of them has really that sort of mentality. Jamal might.
I think Jamal does.
Yeah, especially on the court.
Jamal's the hungry one. Like, yeah. Jamal's the guy that he wants it.
Right.
He's not ready for it yet, but he wants it. I still don't know that he's a point guard, but he can certainly be the fiery, you know, gunner.
He can be the alpha scoring wing that much every single championship team ever has had, right? Like you think back like throughout the championship teams. I mean, the only team that immediately comes to mind that didn't really have that guy was the Mavericks, which is to me is almost as big. That team is almost as big of an anomaly as the Detroit Pistons.
Well, but in the playoffs, wasn't it Terry who just like lost?
Well, yeah. And Barea, JJ Barea also played out of his mind in that series as well. Jason Kidd was, you know, it was steady for him. But the thing is, that it's not like, you know, you look at all the other championship teams. I mean, there was either, you know, the Dwayne Wades or the Kobe Bryants or the Steph Currys and Klay Thompsons and LeBron James and Kevin Durant.
You want him to be you want Murray to be Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you need him to be. and hopefully just a little bit better of a shooter. And then it, you know, but that's what it's always been. There's always been, and usually that's the number one guy is that scoring wing.
Right.
Maybe that's you know, we think the NBA is changing, but it really hasn't. I mean, that's still been kind of the case. Even until right now, when you think about Golden State, what makes Golden State so potent is that they've got three of the best scoring wings ever to play the game of basketball, honestly.
Exactly.
All right, well, tell you what.
I think we got lost, and I think I probably ran you out of time here on your Spurs.
No, we still got we still got 10 minutes. We still got 10 minutes here. I wanted to –
all right.
One last thought I wanted to have on Jamal Murray to kind of close it all up. Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, the aggressiveness, and the Memphis Grizzlies. I thought it was good last night to see from him. He did not have his shot going. What was he? I think he was
like one for seven.
Yeah, one for seven. Yeah. But yeah. 9 for 10 from the free throw line.
Getting to the line.
Exactly.
And a game they were not calling fouls in was I liked a lot.
Exactly. And when you think, I mean, Jamal Murray is one of the best free throw shooters in the league. So if he's if he can get to the line 10 times, and that's part of his game that I think he's got to develop more, is being more aggressive and getting to the basket and getting fouls because he's so effective from that free throw line. But it was good to see him do it last night, part of the win. All right, let's get into the Spurs since they're coming up here tonight and we've got just a few minutes left. What do you think about LaMarcus Aldridge and how he's come back and is suddenly now he's playing at an all-star level? Is it just a simple opportunity because Kawhi Leonard's not really playing, so somebody's got to lead this team, or is there a legit kind of
change? I think it's buy-in.
Yeah?
I think it's buy-in. I think that there wasn't a lot of trust last year that the coach didn't think that you know, Pop wasn't a believer that Aldridge was buying in because he wasn't. And Aldridge didn't think that Pop was taking him into consideration because he wasn't.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, Pop talked about it this week where he was talking about how, you know, Aldridge came to him and asked for a trade. And Pop thought about it, you know, and said, you know what? I'm obviously doing you wrong. No one's ever, you know, come at me and said that I wasn't taking them into consideration. So why don't I do that? What is it you need that you're not getting from me?
Right.
And they worked it out. He's using LaMarcus a little differently, and LaMarcus is providing the energy and the buy-in that he didn't have last year and reminding people why he was an all-star.
Right. I'll say LaMarcus is back to, I'm pretty sure, I haven't, let me pull up his stats, but he's got to be averaging, he's not quite averaging, I mean, when you think in Portland, he was a 20-10 guy every season. This
yeah, but a lot of that was empty.
Right, exactly, yeah. This year, he's 22-8, so it's... we're kind of nitpicking here, but that's my point. He's back to being that guy who is going to get you. His game. He's a back to the basket kind of guy with a range out to maybe about, you know, he's not a 3-point shooter, but a mid range guy. But he's just he just shoots at such a high rate that he can get you those 20 points. You know, you only maybe need to get him 20 possessions. And he'll get you 20 points every single time. You probably need to get him less than that. And then he's just strong on the boards. I think you're right. I think it's just buy-in from finally getting Pop and him on the same page is clearly paid dividends. I do think a little bit of it is because it's easier to get them on the same page, because I think part of getting them on the same page was, hey, give me the ball more on offense. And
right.
It's easier to do that right now when Kawhi Leonard's been out, when Tony Parker's been kind of coming back from his calf injury. You know, it's worked out well for them. I'm curious to see if Kawhi can get right this year. I'm curious to see if they can continue.
God, I hope Kawhi can get right this year.
It's interesting. I don't know, because right, he's had the, well, now it's the shoulder. He had the he had the calf injury, right, and it didn't sound good. I forget what they called it, what he had, but I think the Latin root of, you know, degenerative was in the word of the injury.
It's never a good sign.
Right, and he was like, this doesn't sound good. But yeah, man, if Kawhi can, I hope and I don't hope, because the Spurs are a team that the Nuggets could very, very easily see in the playoffs, in the first round.
Right.
And Kawhi Leonard will destroy them, like a basketball cyborg that he is. Let me ask you this, Gordon. Since he's out, Other than LaMarcus, who do the Nuggets have to pay attention to on the San Antonio team? I mean, is it just Pau Gasol? Is that really it, or is there somebody else you think is going to hurt them?
Well, Pau is gonna hurt them just because Pau and LaMarcus together means that Jokic has to be on one of them,
right?
And neither one is a great matchup for him. I expect him to be on Pau. That'll be fun. Like, on offense, he should be able to do fine. And on defense, we're going to find out. But honestly, like, whenever we say who could possibly hurt the Nuggets, usually the answer is some random guy. Right. Like, it's usually some random guy that demolishes the Nuggets in these sorts of games.
It's especially
so, you know,
true
Kyle Anderson. Yep. Yeah. And they have those guys. Patty Mills. Like, I don't know. But any of those guys can rip the Nuggets up because the Nuggets aren't really good at limiting people to what they do worst. That's not a Nugget skill.
This is you're...
The Nugget skill is usually let them do what they do best, and then we'll try to do what we do best, and we think we'll be better than you at that.
This is like when you think about like Brian Forbes and DeMarco Murray might end up going like, you know, 11 of 14 from 3-point line tonight, and I would not,
right. Yeah,
I'd be
yeah.
like, yep, all right, that makes sense. That's,
I'd be not shocked at all.
Right. That's Nuggets against the Spurs.
If the Spurs go 12 for 26 from the three, I'm going to be like, yep, that sounds right. You know, that's fine.
What about, you got any concerns about Mr. Manu Ginobili anymore? I mean, like, is this guy, is he even part of a game plan anymore? Or is he just like a guy off the bench now?
Well, it depends. Is Gary Harris going to play? Like, we don't.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, at this point, I don't know if Gary's going to make the game. So if Gary doesn't make the game, then there are certain matchup problems you run into off the bench. You're going to be basically telling Beasley to stop Manu from driving to the rim.
Right.
And that could get amusing really quick.
Right.
You know, we'll see. I mean, it'll be another chance for Beasley to show that his defensive chops have really grown this year. He's surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, he's...
With how quickly his defensive acumen is picked up. Because his first year, he would get on the court and he would not know who was going where. He would not be aware of what's happening behind him. You know, he was barely aware of what's happening in front of him. The game was just moving too fast.
Right.
And now you watch him with his head on a swivel. He had there was a steal that happened last night where I believe it was Chandler just ripped the ball away and Beasley jumped on the floor to grab that. But Beasley had already turned around and knew what was happening and knew his guy was not involved and had been backing up and prepping to be in position to basically get that steal.
Right.
It was – I'm glad to see that happening. That's a result of hard work. That's film study. That's, you know
– It's also buy-in,
right?
There's
a lot of on-court work. Yeah.
Because coach has said if you want minutes, that's – you got to play defense. That's how you're going to get on the court. So –
Right. And Beasley, I mean, Beasley in college was just a scorer.
Beasley, right. In
college was a 3-point blaster, and he would rebound. He was kind of like Will Barton.
You know what's really
interesting? He would grab some rebounds. Go ahead.
Richard Jefferson specifically spoke about Malik Beasley, and that he was asked, you know, it was kind of about what about Malik is making him better, and he pretty much said that's what it's been, is buy-in on defensive end. Yep. And exactly what you said, that you know, you were a scorer in college and you were the man in college. He's like, but every single guy in this locker room was the man in college. Every single guy in this locker right. room was a McDonald's All-American. Like, these, it's not about what you do, it's about what the team does, you know,
right.
and what the team needs you to do, and Malik's one of those guys who's bought into that.
He's taken his role very seriously, and I think honestly somebody like Gary Harris helps with that.
Right.
Where Gary's like, look, man, you know, I do what I do. You know, you need me to shoot threes, I shoot threes. You want me to defend some guys, I defend some guys.
Right.
You know, I'm not out here for me. I'm out here for the team. And when you watched Gary get mega paid for being, you know, essentially, you know, a tremendous role player with some star potential. But, I mean, basically what he does is, here's my role. My role on this team is to be the two guard who defends the, you know, the primary ball handler. And, you know, I make threes and I cut to the hoop. That's it. And people will find me. I have faith.
Right.
And so Beasley's having faith. And I love that he's having faith. It's doing wonders for his game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see. That's the Nuggets have enough scorers, too. That's the thing. I mean, they've got
yeah.
they need wing defenders that desperately is that and a veteran point guard are probably the two things I think that are the biggest holes on this team right now.
Well, they need a three. They need a small forward, but right now they're somewhat playing – they're playing Beasley as a swingman.
Right.
They're playing him as a 2-3, which I think is funny because he's not any bigger than Gary Harris.
Right, yeah.
But
he feels like he is, though, right? Because he feels like he is.
Spindly. Yeah.
I guess it's a good way to describe him. He's
yeah, but I mean, and he's got some strength. Like you'll see him body guys up. It's not like Barton doesn't really body anybody up because he's 175 pounds,
right?
You know, right. But Beasley will body some guys up too. He takes his job seriously, and I love that he does. That's good. I'm glad to see it because the Nuggets really, really need. Like you said, they need him in that role. They need somebody. Murray's not a great, you know, defender yet, and Harris is a good on-ball defender, but you need more. Like, because when guys get in the paint against us, they score. When guys get out in transition on us, they score. The Nuggets don't have that rim protector. They don't have that defensive presence, and they don't even have the guy who switches out early. They don't have Paul Millsap.
Yep.
You know, they don't have the guy who can cut the guy off on his way to the lane. So the more that you can stop the ball penetration from the wing, the better off you're going
to
be.
It's really the only way they can do it, to be honest. It's the only way. To me, if Jokic is going to be a featured player on your team, you pretty much have to have elite wing defense to stop the penetration because you're never going to have great rim protection. All right, well, real quick, Gordon, who you got? Yep. Spurs or Nuggets tonight? What do you think the score is going to be?
I never pick against the Spurs in San Antonio when Denver is there.
On a back-to-back.
yeah. I'm just saying, historically, that is not good for us. That's pretty much like, I will never again pick the Nuggets against San Antonio or against Sacramento. Because apparently no Malone team can ever play Sacramento correctly.
That is correct. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the Nuggets have much of a chance tonight. I figure it'll be something like Spurs 98, Nuggets 87, something like that.
Yeah, something like that sounds about right. Now, you never know. Like, somebody goes off or Gary comes back and has a historic game. Like, sure, let's bring it.
Right.
But the Nuggets are going to have to work for this one, and they haven't wanted to work for a lot recently.
Right.
So last night was good effort, even though it wasn't good ball game. You know, at least the last three quarters were a good effort.
Right.
So they're going to need about four more quarters of that.
There you go. All right. He is Gordon Gross at GMoneyNugs. I am at Zach Mikosh at Zach Mikosh. We are, of course, on DenverStiffs.com at DenverStiffs. And you are listening to Nothing But Net Radio at InTheIn-Radio. Appreciate you guys listening. Gordon, appreciate you being on.
You bet.
All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week.